Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our, my partner, my co-host, Jeff Wenninger. He's a retired LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant from LAPD just over a year ago. He hasn't been gone that long. In fact, I heard that they really are upset and that they want you back, Jeff, but you're not gone. But anyhow, welcome to the show, Lieutenant Jeff. Appreciate you being here. Also, want to mention our sponsors. Guys, please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths and expense to support this show. Radio is not cheap, and we're nationally syndicated, and we're on satellite. That takes a lot. So thank you so much to our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. Also, ComplyTechnologies.com. They're our satellite sponsor. They got us on satellite radio back on May the 5th, and it's been great ever since. AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arms sponsor. We also have GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to Safeguard, we're streaming to pages with 1.5 million followers right now during the live show. Also, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. And we are going to be doing a free $20 TwoBells giveaway for our online store. So be listening for that. That is going to be during today's show. Also, FishOrlandoBass.com. Those are bass fishing charters. And hey, I'm telling you, they've got a great thing going. That's in Orlando. So I keep telling Jeff, and, if you got to go to Orlando and you're taking, the girlfriend and the kid or your kid or someone else's kid or, even grandma and grandpa when they get kids and they've got to go to Orlando because that's what they like to do. There are options, especially if you're a dude and you want to go fishing. Take them, drop them off, let them have a great day at Disney and do the fishing charter with FishOrlandoBass.com. Or they've got the alligator hunting thing going too, where you can catch and release alligators. You don't kill them, which is good. But here in Florida, we get alligator calls all the time, and so they do that too. So FishOrlandoBass.com, or at least check out the website. They got some pretty cool stuff there. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Let's see. Our very first one, main topic, a federal court filing system is hit in a sweeping hack. Somebody sent this to me, and I tell you, I didn't even know about this, so I'm glad that I got the memo on this. Also, anti-ICE Boston sheriff, he gets charged in a cannabis company extortion plot. When you guys hear this, look, nothing upsets good cops more than what bad cops do. This guy's a bad cop, and he's getting his. We've also got Thousand Oaks deputies shoot and kill a guy who's on a balcony with a shotgun. And we have another story with a video component. A Pomona police detective shoots a suspect who presented a replica gun during a foot chase. And we got former Georgia correctional officers indicted after inmate dies from smoke inhalation. And then this is going to be the first story with a video component we're going to cover. So this will be our third story. Body cam shows armed man with a ghost gun. He shoots and injures an LAPD officer during a foot pursuit. That's pretty wild. And of course, that's where Jeff used to work. Also, former Miami Heat employee. This is just a wild story. I don't know if we have, maybe we should take it out of order, but former Miami Heat employee charged for selling $2 million in stolen gear. Former Miami cop, the guy got busted, but wow, what he was doing. Then surveillance video shows a fatal crash of a 79-year-old bicyclist and a Martin County deputy that we still haven't covered yet. So that's what we got. That's the lineup, guys. So we may take some of those out of order. And then if you're watching the video portion of the show, you see over Jeff's shoulder that book, On Thin Ice. And Jeff, before we start, you may just want to give a little update, because people are always wondering what's going on with your new book coming out, On Thin Ice.
Well, On Thin Ice is just about to come out next Monday, the 18th of August. I will be making the announcement here live on the release date. And tune in to find out when that will be. And there's all kinds of other good things you'll be learning about.
Yeah, you guys are going to want to pay very close attention to the show in the coming days and weeks. So very excited, very happy for you, Jeff. So congratulations on that. I know it's an exciting part of your life. So and time. So guys, moving along. Let's go ahead and start off with this first main story. Politico.com. That's the worst thing about the story is that we're getting it from Politico. But it was sent to me by somebody else, and they just wanted to keep us in the loop. It's important information to have. So federal court filing system hit in a sweeping hack. When you guys, wait till you guys hear on what was compromised in this hack. And we're talking, you know, potential informants and witnesses, all kinds of stuff. So this, the electronic case filing system used by the federal judiciary, it's been breached. It's a sweeping cyber intrusion that's believed to have exposed sensitive court data across multiple U.S. states, according to two people with knowledge of the incident. They have not been identified. They've been granted anonymity by Politico because they weren't supposed to be talking about this, but they have. But anyhow, the hack, which has not been previously reported, it's feared to have compromised the identities of confidential informants involved in criminal cases at multiple federal district courts. And that is like crazy scary and dangerous. So the administrative office of the U.S. courts, which manages the federal court filing system, and a lot of this information is new to even me, they first determined how serious the issue was around July the 4th. The office, along with the Justice Department and the individual district courts around the country, they're still trying to determine the full extent of what happened, and it's not immediately clear who was even behind the attack. But it goes on to say that the hackers, they got in. We don't know exactly how, or they're not telling us how, but the incident is known to affect the judiciary's federal core case management system. And there's overlapping components. It's got its case management and electronic case files, and then the CM or ECF. And it's where legal professionals, they use this to upload and manage case documents. And then there's a PACER system that gives the public limited access to some of this info. And so in addition to this, the records on witnesses and defendants that are cooperating with law enforcement. This is where it gets really scary. The filing system includes other sensitive information and it potentially of interest to foreign hackers and criminals and sealed indictments. I mean, golly, really? All that stuff? And alleged crimes, arrests, search warrant information, stuff that could really affect future cases. So chief judges of the federal courts in the 8th District, it includes Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. They were briefed on the hack. And it even goes on to say that Michael Scudder, who chairs the Committee on Information Technology for the Federal Courts National Policymaking, he told the House Judiciary Committee in June that the CM, ECF, and PACER systems were outdated and unsustainable due to cyber risk and required replacement. They weren't keeping up with the technology and the threats that are out there. And then also in July of 2022, so we're talking, 3 years ago, the Justice Department was investigating another hack of a federal court system that then House Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler described as startling. And there were three foreign hacking groups dating back to early 2020. So there's all kinds of information that hasn't necessarily been made known to us, but startling and scary things that are going on. You know, when you start revealing the identity of people that are cooperating with law enforcement, and we're talking a lot of the stuff is on the federal level. I mean, this gets really, really scary. Lieutenant Jeff, were you surprised to hear this?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised because we tend to lag behind when it comes to keeping up with the progress of technology. It's evolving at a much faster rate than our protection systems happen to me. But what really is concerning is, like you said, back in 22, 3 years ago, they had a sign that, hey, we may want to make sure that our security systems or a way of monitoring this or preventing these hacks from occurring are a little more robust than what they actually are. And it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, I mean, we need to be making sure that this takes a high precedent in regards to what we want to make sure is in place and in order. It has to be a top priority. And you look at, you know, look at what they revealed in regards to what the federal government was spending money on. Silly, yeah, projects with overseas and other countries and things like that, when we're not even handling our own systems here at home that are critical to our ability to maintain an efficient and effective and really a credible judicial system. And so I find it to be, it's frightening, but I'm not shocked. It's you know, law enforcement has struggled to keep laws up to speed with the evolution of technology, where people are committing what one would think would be a crime, but we haven't been able to keep up legislatively to ensure that we have laws on the books that address some of the technological stuff that people are able to utilize in order to take advantage of people or you know, obtain information that they wouldn't rightfully have the access to otherwise. So it's a concern. I think that it's a wake-up call that we need to move forward. I mean, how many times do we have to have these types of incidents occur before we actually do something to prevent these types of things from occurring?
Totally agree. Well, we'll keep you guys informed. And again, we want you to be the smartest people in the room when it comes to topics like this, when you're away from the show. So guys, stay tuned. We got our first commercial break coming up. We'll be right back. All right. It's time to talk about our title sponsor, guys, Gauls at Gauls.com. And you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different places, especially when you throw the online mix into it. But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. I mean, even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do, in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focus organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. They even have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. And if you haven't been there lately, go to Gauls.com and check out their gift cards. You know, hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with the new Gauls gift card. I always like to say they'll become your new best friends. And, you know, just over the last week, I just ordered a new pair of boots. I'm waiting to get them from Gauls as well. And they had a nice discount going. I didn't use any other perks or anything. I just bought like you guys do. Go Gauls.com. Now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And guys, if you haven't checked them out lately, maybe you should. Their favorite product they have that I love is called the Glove. And, you know, they have non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, the flagship product, we all know it's the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, I said no injuries. They've achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, retaining or transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already tuned in nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies.com. And don't forget to watch those cool videos, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, talking about a court breach. And a lot of courts around the country got affected by this. And I know you don't want to get to the point where you're not giving them, you know, the information, but it's just really some scary stuff. So I think that we pretty much exhausted that topic. Are you ready to move on to the update, Jeff? You are. Okay. So again, Leo Roundtable for the newcomers here, a law enforcement talk show. And we are nationally syndicated on satellite radio. And we've got Lieutenant Jeff Winninger from LAPD on the show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. Our next topic that we're going to talk about, it is an update story. So we've got, it's from rvmnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media, and also Tampa FP, which is the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Anti-ICE Boston Sheriff gets charged in a cannabis company extortion plot. So look, this sheriff, he's no big fan of really law enforcement because he hates ICE apparently, but the Suffolk County Sheriff's Department Sheriff Stephen Tompkins, who's been a prominent supporter of sanctuary policies and a vocal opponent of immigration and customs enforcement operations in Boston, he was arrested on Friday in Florida, where I'm at, on federal extortion charges. And, you know, it just makes you laugh. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Sheriff Tompkins, he faces two counts of extortion under color of official right following a federal grand jury indictment. The prosecutors allege that he used his elected position to pressure an executive at a national cannabis company of all places seeking to operate in the Boston area. And this is how it goes down. The indictment stems from the events that started back in 2019. The cannabis company applied for a license to open a dispensary in Boston. As part of that process, they had to, they were required to submit what they called a positive impact plan, and they had to detail how it was going to benefit the local community. So the company fulfilled that requirement because they partnered with this sheriff's agency, the Suffolk County Sheriff's Department, and they were going to employ formerly incarcerated individuals through a reentry program. The federal prosecutors allege that after the partnership was publicized, Tompkins, the sheriff, he approaches the company executive and pressures them to allow him to invest in the business. And concerned that rejecting the request might threaten the relationship with the sheriff's department and potentially delay the licensing process for future public offering, the executive agreed because they were going to go public. So in 2020, the sheriff wired $50,000 to purchase shares in the company that were valued at $1.73 per share. Now, after they did a reverse stock split, he bought shares for $173. Then it jumped up to over 14,000 shares, and they were valued at about twice as much, almost $3.50 each. And then when the company went public in 2021, the stock was valued at $9.60 a share. Remember, we started off at $1.73, so almost $10 a share. Now, by May of 2022, the value had declined, though. Prosecutors say that the sheriff started demanding repayment of his original $50,000. That would be a great investment if you could always get your money back, right? According to the indictment, the executive complied with the demand despite the loss of the stock, and he made five separate payments between May 2022 and July 2023 to the sheriff. Prosecutors allege that the sheriff instructed the executive to label some of the checks as loan repayment or company expenses in the memo line to conceal the true nature of the transactions. And our sheriff was taken into custody by the FBI in Florida following the indictment. If convicted, he faces the possibility of significant fines and prison time under federal sentencing guidelines. So, yeah, the sheriff, he really screwed up this time, I think, and he may not be around too much longer to talk about it. What do you think, Lieutenant?
Well, I find it really perplexing. You know, with the LAPD, even though the state of California legalized marijuana, we were tested for drugs randomly. And it could be up to three times a year. And even though it was legal, you couldn't use marijuana as a Los Angeles police officer. And if you tested positive, you were subject to termination. So to think that you have a sheriff that's in charge of a entire law enforcement agency who thinks it's a good idea to invest money in cannabis, it's just bad judgment to begin with. Because the reality is the federal laws haven't changed. It's correct. still a federal offense. Although states have taken upon themselves to make things legal within their jurisdictions, it's always safe to just keep yourself at an arm's length and to get yourself as the top executive of a law enforcement agency involved with $50,000. That's a substantial amount of money. But then thinking that you can, when it goes sideways on you, that you can demand your money back, it's just unbelievably, I don't know. It's just there's no word to explain it. What a pompous mentality. But I would suggest that it's probably a best practice for law enforcement, especially top executives, to stay away from this sort of thing. Not a good idea.
Yeah, I agree with my exposure, things that I've seen, and I guarantee it's the same for Lieutenant Jeff. I simply couldn't do it. I just, with legalization, I mean, I would have to have a pretty bad medical condition that could only be solved by partaking in marijuana, to ever use the stuff, because just with everything we've seen the gateway drug, I mean, you know, we've seen so many things. I want no part of it. They can legalize it if they want to, but it's just, you know, I'm not investing in it. I'm not going to touch it. Yeah.
The other thing to consider is that if you look at the studies and the crime data that has been gathered following these dispensaries opening, the reality is the fact that it's a federal offense, they tend to operate in cash. So that brings the criminal
a whole nother. Yeah.
So if you look at the crime statistics, there tends to be a lot more violent crime around these dispensaries because of the fact that everything's done in cash. And why, as a law enforcement executive, if you want to put yourself associated with something that's going to draw that kind of crime is beyond me.
Oh, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here saying this, but I'll bet he'll never do that again. So stick with us, guys. It's time for a second commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Yes, they are back, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, We're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit aeroprecisionusa.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. And, you know, they've got Tier 1, 2, and 3 rifles as well. You know, since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with soulless bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit aeroprecisionusa.com last year, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, and they're now being tailored for the civilian customer. And their M5 AR 308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. Don't settle for less, but you can have the best guys. Head over to aeroprecisionusa.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to, plus they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up this week, all about trespassing, August the 13th. You can sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Bluethegold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're joined by our co-host, Lieutenant Jeff Wenninger, former LAPD commander, also the author of the upcoming book, On Thin Ice. You go to jeffwenninger.com or onthinicebook.com in order to get more information. Jeff, I know that we've been talking about, you know, a couple of stories so far. Where did we leave off? Did you have something you wanted to add on the last one, or?
No, I think we're ready. LAPD video, yeah.
All right, I've got it keyed up here. So we've got some stories with video components for our listeners. And look, if you're listening audibly, you know, your favorite podcast or radio station, please stay loyal to those outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we will describe in great detail what's going on with any video component that we're talking about. But if we cover something that you absolutely have to see, you've got to see the video. All you got to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day. You know, our show is live and it's Eastern time during the lunch hour, 12 to 1 o'clock Eastern time, Monday through Friday. But on Tuesday through Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning, we have a special version of the prior day show that comes out. And our producer will embed every video that we talk about as we're talking about it. He'll also put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. So it's really a unique way to watch the show that you can catch Tuesday through Saturday starting at 9 o'clock Eastern time. So you can always do that. So this very first one, rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Body cam shows an armed man with a ghost gun, means it was no serial number. He's shooting and injuring an LAPD officer during a foot chase.
Face away. Put your treasure back. We can talk to you. Okay. I got it. George. Oh, shit. Fuck. Shots fired. Officer needs help. Suspect's running southbound. He's shooting at us.
So here's what happens. We're in, of course, Los Angeles, California. A 26-year-old bad guy ended up being charged this week in a ghost gun shooting. And I guess it really was last week that injured a Los Angeles Police Department officer. And this is south of the downtown L.A. So Ernesto Supervilla, he faces 2 counts of premeditated attempted murder. Wow. Of a police officer, a felony count of carrying an unregistered loaded handgun, and our bad guys accused of using this ghost gun in the July 5th shooting that happened in Exposition Park. So if convicted, he could face 75 years to life in state prison. He pled not guilty at the arraignment on Wednesday. Now, officers saw our bad guy. He's riding a bicycle, and they saw what they thought was a gun in his pocket. And it says that he pulls out the gun and open fire, striking one officer in the leg. And then we got 2 other officers chasing him and eventually taking him into custody. His bond was set at $3 million. The weapon, the ghost gun, was recovered at the scene. I've got my show notes here just to add a little bit more detail because we're trying to go in great detail on this. They stopped him on the bike, and, you know, I'll let Jeff kind of describe, you know, what happens, but he gets off the bike and he's able to sprint away. No one really goes hands on. And so it was a little bit uncharacteristic of what we would normally see law enforcement do, especially when you have reason to believe a guy's got a gun, you immediately would secure that threat and prevent that from escalating. And during the chase, he just turns around. And I mean, it is such close proximity. And he produces this gun, literally no time for the cop to react. The cop luckily got shot in the leg, and the bad guy temporarily gets away. Now, it doesn't mention it, but there is a spectacular tackle of the bad guy on pavement. And the guy was in a prone position when he goes down. So I can only imagine the road rash the guy had all over the front of his face and body and stuff. But the cop that took this guy down, I was impressed. He ditched the gun just before he went down. I'm trying to remember that. I thought that he had, but he ditches the gun before the spectacular tackle happened. So I don't know if the cops were aware of that or not. He's lucky he didn't get shot after he'd already shot a cop. There was a little bit of a beat down the correct word. You know, he's a bad guy, probably not compliant. So he did take some licks in before they were finally able to get him under control. But it was the tackle was one of the most spectacular things I've seen in a long time. Lieutenant Jeff, love to get your thought on this. And this is where you used to work. So I'm sure, are you familiar with the area this went down in?
Yeah, I am. It's Southwest Division. And so, which is just south of the 10 freeway. So it would constitute part of what's called South Los Angeles. And it actually borders Rampart, the north really? Border of Southwest Division. In the south border of Rampart Division are next to each other. So these officers were gang officers. When you watch the video, their unit number was George 22. The George is for gang. So these were gang officers. They don't answer radio calls. They are out there to reduce violent gang crime and make contacts and interview gang members during their shift to gain all kinds of information and intelligence relative to gang crimes that have already occurred, crimes that are being planned to occur in the future. And oftentimes they focus on the current gangs that are feuding, because oftentimes when you have a gang shooting, you can pretty much expect there's going to be another one in close proximity of time in retaliation. So those are the types of things that they're going to be engaged in on a daily basis. I would suspect that they were fairly familiar with this individual, perhaps, you know, knew him by name, certainly probably knew him by his gang name, and his criminal history. I don't know, Chip, but they stopped him for riding a bike that didn't appear to have brakes. I think that's what I heard them say to him. Frankly, I don't think I've heard that one before, but it's, you know, it's always good to be very well versed in the vehicle code as well as the penal code to use it to your advantage to justify legal detentions of people. So I don't question that. But the tactics that they used, and I can tell you this, having been with the LAPD for over 30 years and having written the adjudication recommendations for officer-involved shootings and lethal force cases for Chief William Bratton and Chief Charlie Beck, there's a number of tactical issues that are going to be addressed. I'm certain of that. You never want to pull up next to a suspect in the manner that they did, because the car is a coffin. And when you pull up just adjacent to somebody that's on a bike, especially someone that you know to be a gang member, you better take it for, don't take it for granted that they're not armed. You should believe that they're armed, and your tactics should be consistent with that. So not only did I not like necessarily the deployment of the vehicle, but then how kind of lackadaisical they were when they were initially interacting with him. And when they noticed what they believed to be a gun in his pocket, their lack of taking physical control of him. These are gang officers, which are generally more highly trained than your average patrol officer and are dealing with people on a regular basis that should be perceived as posing a more significant risk of a threat to you and to the public. And so it was rather lackadaisical, but I'm not sure that they were convinced that he had a gun, because when the suspect ran, LAPD tactics, and I've mentioned this in other shows, is that you don't pursue somebody if you believe that they have a gun for the purposes of apprehension. It's for containment purposes. And when you do that, you're moving from positions of cover to cover, keeping eyes on them and then directing in the personnel resources to set up a perimeter or a containment. So you can have canine come in and do a methodical, systematic search of the area for the suspect and hopefully find the suspect as well as the firearm. That's what we teach. There it appeared he's running directly behind him with the attempting to take him into custody. So it's that's a tough scenario when a suspect turns on you like that. We've lost a number of officers that way in the LAPD. And not only was this officer shot in the legs, but near the end of the video, they also said that it was determined when he was at the hospital, he had a graze wound to his cheek. So we're talking, he was extremely lucky to survive this. And why is this kind of significant? Back in on August 9th of 1998, Phil Cuesta, who I worked with at 77th Division, then at Central Traffic Division, he worked Crash, which was the gang unit at the time, in Southwest Division, same division where these guys were working. And he was shot and killed. He was shot in the back of the head while he was sitting in a police vehicle awaiting additional resources to come to address a gang party. And he died. And this was on, I think this occurred on July 5th. So just a little bit before, a little bit more than a month before the anniversary of Phil Cuesta's death and at the hands of gang members. So, there's a lot of things that can be learned from this. I got to applaud that officer that tackled the suspect. When the suspect, when he ran into the park, he ran into Martin Luther King Park, which is right there. Where they were at 39th Place in Western. And he ran into the park and he looked like he obviously wanted everybody to see him ditch the gun.
I would too.
It's really obvious. But so I think the officers probably knew, but that was a heck of a tackle.
Yeah, I agree. And just the skid across the pit. Yeah, that was beautiful. And in case you missed it, I think it was Betty Dunn posted when George was off in the Speedos and you told him to color your eyes. She said, "Who's going to be looking at your eyes?" So I don't know if you picked up on that or not, but hey, we're coming up on our next commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and your co-host is Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander. He also has On Thin Ice coming out. You get the jeffwinninger.com or onthinicebook.com to get more information. And Jeff, I know we were talking about that LAPD story where we had a cop shot during a foot pursuit by a ghost gun. The article didn't say anything about LAPD shooting at the bad guy, but when you watch the video and hear the number of gunshots, even some delayed shots, if I wasn't watching the video, I would have assumed that there was some return fire going on, but it doesn't say anything about that. So you think all those shots came from the bad guy with a ghost gun?
No, I mean, I was under the impression that the officers had fired.
Were you? Okay.
Suspect. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that would make more sense. I'd be shocked if they hadn't. I mean,
yeah.
I would be concerned if they hadn't. What threat are you waiting for, if not that threat?
Yeah, that certainly would make more sense, to me. So, but anyway,
yeah, another, I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on how LAPD does things and relative to their processing or their thought process about pursuing somebody that is reasonably believed to have a gun, how we don't try to apprehend them, that we do it through containment and stuff.
You know, we certainly operate differently here on the, I like to say in the East Coast, but you know, we work with so many other agencies. I'm just wasn't aware. LAPD is the first agency that I've ever been made aware of in all the years of law enforcement of doing it that way. And not that I disagree with that, because it makes sense. However, you know, our thought pattern would be to containment, but to neutralize the threat, you know, as soon as possible. But if we, you know, obviously if we saw him running in what might be a populated area, there might be a threat to some people running up towards cars or traffic, we would take him out. We would shoot him back, whatever, doesn't matter. Just like you guys, it doesn't, you know, we can legally be justified in shooting a bad guy in the back all day long, but we would normally give chase unless it was an environment where it was just, you know, if you had like a sniper if you were going to be way out into the open and you thought, or maybe you're chasing a guy that had a long gun, or maybe you had like a drum magazine or something, that would change the scenario for me. But again, it's how you're trained too. And growing up and going through the academy and teaching this stuff, this is what we've taught. This is how we've taught and what we've been taught. So that's just the mentality is, we're going to chase and shoot that guy. And hopefully, and you know what, I'd like to think that I'm pretty aware of the backdrop, but you know, you may or may not be, but not all officers are created equally when it comes to those backdrops. So, you know, when you're shooting and you've got a parking lot, or you've got a crowd of people around, or maybe an interstate or whatever, you don't want, you know, there's certain times where you absolutely don't want to fire the shots unless it's just a totally rare situation where you absolutely have to at any cost. But did that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, with the LAPD, a lot of people will look at it and say, well, that's kind of restrictive. But I got to tell you, there's incidents, multiple incidents that have occurred that have influenced these policies to be put into place.
Like, if that had happened with us, we may have. Yeah. I mean, look, if we had cops getting taken out, turning corners in the middle of foot pursuits and bad guys with guns, or that, you know, I could see where we would be reactive and change the policy. So in all honesty, have we had some incidents similar to that? Yeah, but not an overwhelming number. And maybe it's due to the area, or maybe it's the size of the agency. You know, my agency is about 1,000-man agency. So not small, but not a 35,000 like LAPD or the size of LAPD. So what do you guys have?
Yeah, we have 10,000. I think they're down to like 8,300 or something now. But you know, we had Tina Cabrat. She was a fresh out of the academy, a probationary officer, and she was a passenger officer, and her partner was driving and pulled up right next to a suspect. And as she's getting out of the car, shot and killed. Yeah. And Mario Navidad, he was at Wilshire Division when I was a field training officer there, and he and his partner were flagged down by an employee at a 7-Eleven. About a guy that had stole a case of beer, and he directed him to this alley, and they pulled up to address him, and he pulled out a gun, shot Mario, and unfortunately went into his armpit, went across his chest, took out his heart, and he died. So you know, you have these incidents where it's like, you know, you never pull directly a line next to a suspect. It's too dangerous. We don't do that. The car is the coffin. You know, when it comes to, you know, foot pursuits, you had Steve Guida on New Year's Eve, and the Hollenbeck Division was chasing a guy who had fired a gun into the air, and the guy just fired over his shoulder, shot him right in the face, killed him instantly. You had Christina Rapati. She was in Southwest Division where this incident occurred, and she was in foot pursuit of a guy. And as he was running into his home, he turned and fired, and she was struck, and she wasn't killed, but she was permanently paralyzed. So, you know, these, that's just off the top of my head. I mean, it's just,
we certainly changed our time. Yeah. Chasing armed suspects in a car, different protocols. We've changed that. Rolling roadblocks, you know, virtually eliminated those. Pits, but not always in situations, especially when dealing with armed individuals, you know, because you're in close proximity. At the end of the pit, and then it's, the skid training. Look, we've had some great training with the skid training. Almost all the pits I see, the police car does not end up where it's supposed to be. And it's all about turning the right way and braking the right way after the pit's been executed. Right. But we certainly have made changes, but there is night and day difference between the way that we do things on the different coasts. It's kind of crazy, but we've got just enough time to cover this Thousand Oaks one. If you're okay with that, rumble.com. This is Butter. Thousand Oaks deputies shoot and kill a man who was on a balcony with a shotgun.
Drop the shotgun, sheriff's office.
Drop it.
Was that him right there, maybe? Yeah, there he is. He's got a shotgun. Holy
shit. Drop the shotgun, sheriff's office.
There's one.
Drop it.
At that time, another family member was still inside the residence, and the deputies were unable to make contact, leaving them unaware of the individual's condition. After the deputies formulated and executed a tactical plan to approach and enter the residence.
And so here's how this thing goes down. It happened on July the 1st, 8 p.m. In the evening. Ventura County Sheriff's Office deputies, they're called out. It's a neighborhood. Reports of a guy having a mental health crisis. He has a gun. When deputies get there, they talk to a family member who tells them this guy is Dominic's. It's either Siad or Sod. He had threatened them with a gun. So they see him go out on the home balcony with a shotgun in his hands. And when they tell him to put down the gun, security footage shows this guy racking one. They say cocking the gun. He racks one in the chamber, and he ends up firing it at the deputies. And they return fire in kind. According to the agency, another one of the family members was still in the home. It took them a while to get to this bad guy on the balcony to try to enter aid. And I know that citizens listen to this. Yeah, when we shoot bad guys, we go in and we try to save their life. It's the craziest thing, but that's what we're trained to do, and we're normally pretty good at it. But anyhow, he was pronounced dead at the scene. Just in my show notes and watching some of the stuff, they were pretty right when the deputies yelling drop it, and our deputy had a long gun and he was on ground level. Remember, this guy's up on the balcony. You can see when they go to the surveillance video, you can actually see the guy racking one and shooting at the deputy. But from the deputy's at the long gun, you can't really see what he's aiming at, but he takes out the bad guy. And this all goes down very quickly. It's a short little video. But the video quality, I was pretty impressed. It was pretty good. What do you think, Lieutenant?
Yeah, no, really. I mean, it was reported this guy was suffering from a mental health crisis. And, 36% of officer-involved shootings generally involve somebody suffering a mental health crisis. And we want to do what we can to try to preserve life always. But that doesn't mean that we have to be pacifists. The reality is we have to respond to the circumstances that we're confronted with. And in this case, this guy had high ground. It wasn't a house. It looked like it was a condominium complex. And he was up on a second story balcony. There was a family member that was also, he had access to, that was inside the condominium complex. And these officers were confronted with a guy that not only was armed, but he was manipulating the firearm and then fired it. So they responded in a manner that was definitely appropriate to address their safety, as well as, even more importantly, the safety of family members and other citizens that live in that condominium complex. So, I was just impressed with their shooting, from the distance he fired from with the long gun, their composure, and they handled themselves very professionally.
Yeah, I loved it. I love the fact we had a long gun on the scene when we needed a long gun on the scene, and it was a spectacular ending, and no one got hurt except for the bad guy, because not long ago we had a story where we had a shotgun that took that a breaching round took out a couple people. It was an accidental one that we covered on Friday's show. So, but we're coming down to the end of the wire on this. So, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger from LAPD, thank you so much for being on the show. Also, congratulations on your new book coming out, On Thin Ice. And again, guys, you go to jeffwinninger.com or onthinicebook.com to get more information about that. I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in a world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So if you haven't checked them out lately, please go to thewoundedblue.org. I give to them monthly. And if you're looking for an organization to support that's doing great work and that they're not going to embarrass you, please consider the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. And I know that we're giving away a Two Bells gift card giveaway. I've got a couple entries here, so I'm going to look and make sure that I've got the, you know, I've got the email address to make that done. So we're going to give that giveaway at the end of the show. But a shout out to our sponsors: Gauls.com, Compliant Technologies, Aero Precision, Gunlearn, Blue the Gold, My Medicare Safeguard Recruiting, Two Bells, and Fish, OrlandoBass.com. Thanks for your support, guys. We'll look for you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.